Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Laufer, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of NucleCast. Of course, as always, I'm your host, Adam Lowther, and today we have a great guest. I'm talking about Beth Rafferty. She's the Vice President, Supply Chain and Logistics at Electric Boat. And for those of you that might not know Electric Boat, they're building your Columbia-class submarines. So, they're one of those companies we really need in the defense industrial base. And we're going to talk about, building submarines. And it's actually kind of a timely and great topic. So, of course, welcome, Beth. Thanks for being on this episode of NucleCast.
Thank you.
Good to have you. And most people might say supply, logistics, I don't know, is that an exciting topic? And I'll tell you, yes, it is an exciting topic, especially when you're talking about building things that launch nuclear weapons. That's the best kind of supply to talk about. So, there's an article that we have posted at Global Security Review, written by Curtis McGiffin and Kurt Fancher. And that article talks a lot about we need to reload the tubes in Ohio. Essentially you're saying these are the kind of ways that we're going to have to do in order to sort of match the threat. And I immediately thought, well, how can we do this? I don't know that we have the dry docks and the welders and we're having trouble building the new stuff, much less, working the old stuff. And so I started thinking about welders and pipe fitters and dry docks and all of the things that I kind of think you think about a lot. And I thought, well, I'm curious, could we do such things? So, of course, having you on NucleCast to talk about these kinds of topics, because that's exactly what you're in charge of. So let me sort of tee up the discussion and ask you, as we're trying to build Columbia, and we're going to build fast attacks, we're going to build lots of submarines. Do we have the industrial base, the supply chain, the welders, the dry docks, the pipe fitters, all the many things that it takes to build submarines? Because it doesn't really seem like we have it all. Do we have it? Is it existent? Is it something we have to build to? Where are we? Where are we going?
Yeah, thank you. So I'd say we absolutely have it. So we have the talent, the skills, the entire supply chain in order to build and deliver these unbelievably complex machines. What we don't have is sufficient capacity and necessarily enough of the capabilities to do it at the pace that we really need to build submarines for the U.S. Navy. So today we are producing at a rate that is not as high as we want it to be. We're really still in the beginning of Columbia class production with the first hull under contract and under construction today. And in the future, we will be delivering those ships at a one per year pace. So you think about that volume, a ship that's 2.5 times the size of a Virginia, on top of the workload that both the shipbuilders and the industrial base are supporting today, it's a big growth trajectory. And it's a big growth trajectory coming out of a very low rate production in the early 90s to 2000s, where most of industry in the United States was kind of struggling for their survival. In this trough of low rate production, we spent a lot of time as businesses really fighting for survival. And now all those same businesses are in a position where they need to produce at a rate that's unprecedented. So we have the talent. We have the the facilities that are capable, but the volume and velocity has to pick up substantially. So that means investment in facilities, it means investment in people or growth in facility, growth in people. In a lot of cases, we need to explore secondary sources for more resiliency. So there is a tremendous amount of rebuilding happening right now. It is my entire life these days to figure out how we climb that curve, which is, as you can imagine, quite strained. So in the middle of this rise of production rates, we were faced with a pandemic. We were faced with unprecedented resignations or retirements, or really a whole change in the demographic of the industrial base, as well as, some unprecedented inflation over the past few years, which manifests itself in all kinds of negative ways. So the challenge is huge. I would say in my interactions every day, the 3,000-ish companies that we work with, I guess I don't talk to 3,000 of them every day, but there's engagements with these companies every day. They are energized. The submarine industrial base is committed to the mission. They are energized, but it's going to take some time to really grow that capacity that we need to be successful in the long run.
So it seems what you're saying is we have the foundation.
You got it.
We have the innate knowledge, but we don't have, we might have great welders who can build a submarine, but we don't have enough to build two or three.
You got it.
So for, I've heard of some programs, that I think it was on the Super Bowl last year. when Kansas City won its second on, of course, on the way to the third victory.
But you got that? You guarantee in that one?
I am an Alabama graduate, so my heart does tug a little bit for Jalen Hurts. So, KC's probably going to pull it off. But, there was last year was the first time we saw those, build subs.
Buildsubmarines.com.
Yeah. And so, there's clearly an effort to try to grow this. And, as a dad who has a kid who wants to do things with his hands and wants to be an engineer and he wants to be a nuclear propulsion officer. And I'm sort of paying more attention to these types of things than I have in the past. And so I sort of wonder for the dads who might be listening to this podcast, because you probably have a lot out there. And maybe they have teenagers or young 20s who are trying to figure out their lives and what they can do. So what are some of those opportunities for that, that are out there that you're trying to fill slots, and how do they go about doing that kind of, career, finding?
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's a great question. And I think that's another dynamic that, we kind of fight every day. Because I don't know about you, but when I was in school, no one was promoting jobs in manufacturing. They were promoting go to college, go get a nice technical job. You want to be in management. But manufacturing was not exciting. I got to tell you, there is so much opportunity in manufacturing across this nation that if you as a teenager wanted a job as a welder, as an electrician, as a high-end machinist, there is opportunity all over the place. And I wouldn't even stop it at the kind of the builder trades. There is a high demand in things like non-destructive testing, which is an art or a science. I'm not sure which, but those folks are brilliant and they're priceless when you get a really qualified and experienced NDT technician. So you name it. There's opportunity. You have the two primary submarine builders between Electric Boat and Newport News. We have job offerings in a wealth of different trades and other capacities. But the platform that you mentioned, the buildsubmarines.com, that's a product of some of the Navy's great efforts to attack this problem, provides a great forum into the entire industrial base. So suppliers in the chain can subscribe to the platform, and it connects people with all kinds of opportunities. I like to think of, if you want to be in submarines, you pick the place you want to live, and you can find a job. You're ready to learn the skills and do some hard work, but there's jobs.
So as you you know, you said we have the foundation, but walk me through all of those sort of specific things and, you know, whether it's types of skill sets, whether it's, you know, dry docks, whether whatever it may be, walk me through what we have to grow and help give us sort of a picture so that, you know, the listeners can understand and really imagine what you're needing and what that growth has to look like.
Okay. Well, I'd say in a lot of the companies we deal with, so many companies we deal with, they've got a great foundation, as you referred to it. I think that's pretty appropriate. They may have aging infrastructure, you know, so they've got some machines to do the job, but they're not as reliable, can't produce parts at, you know, a first-time quality level. So they need upgrades to their facility. They generally need the skilled trades in order to operate the facility. In a lot of cases, they're accustomed to running their plant with kind of, you know, the assumption of infinite capacity. Because when you talk about low rate production, you can pretty much take any order that comes at you and know that you can complete it within a certain amount of time. Now, when you're talking about a large volume, you need to be sizing facilities to be able to complete a certain capacity of work. So the tools to manage the business sometimes need some developing to make sure you kind of have a sophisticated shop floor management system. So that's sometimes some of the things that we work with suppliers to deal with. In other cases, where we've got some of our strategic sourcing partners, we call them. So there's a large amount of work that in order for the shipbuilders to meet the submarine demand that we're going to need to put out into the industrial base, that it's of a level of complexity that we typically don't outsource. So very complex products. We do it with a different model to really integrate both the learning curve that the Electric Boat specifically has developed, you know, so that you can start a supplier off kind of, you know, with a boost in knowledge and understanding. In some of those cases, we're actually building new buildings in order to house some of these products to make sure that they can take on some of that load and give us kind of relief valve is the way I think about that particular model. We call that our focus factories, if you've ever mm-hmm. heard that term.
So it's that time in the show where we have to take a quick break. So we'll do that. And then when we come back, you've talked about, you know, some of your subs who are building components, I take it. The parts and pieces that go into the larger submarine that Electric Boat itself builds. Can you talk to me about, you know, sort of what are the skill sets and trades and types of engineers and other things that you would like to see grow as well? So you're listening to Nuclicast, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Nuclicast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence.
And we're back, and, you know, Beth, I gave you a question before the break. So we talked about, you know, subcontractors. Now, what types of specific skills and, you know, jobs are the ones that you're looking to fill?
Okay. It's broad. Where we tend to see, I would say, the most opportunity is in our steel trades, welders, fitters. I would say machining is a close second, as well as quality assurance. Quality assurance is big between the NDT capable technicians, risk control, let's see what else, people that when you work in the submarine industrial base, a big part of the job is certification of work. So we often operate to, well, we definitely operate a higher standard than a lot of commercial industry. So every bit of our work gets certified. And so the quality analysts and certifiers are pretty important. Engineers, both manufacturing engineering and welding engineering specifically, are pretty prevalent in the industrial base, the needs for them. But program management is big. Let's see what else. I'm pretty sure you could pick something you want to do and you'll find a need out there.
Yeah. So now as you sort of are putting this all together and, you know, you're responsible for supply chain and logistics, what problems are you spending most of your day on?
I spend a lot of time on performance. So across our suite of suppliers, I would say a great number of them today are struggling to meet even today's demands. So we're dealing with a lot of delinquency. So I spend a lot.
So is this like a mom and pop machining shop that's been around, you know, somewhere in central Connecticut, I guess. And they were making widgets for some totally other different thing. And then they decided they wanted to come make some part that you needed. And you said, okay, well, here's what we need. And here's the quality. And here's the, and they said, I think we can do that. And then they said, okay, let's try. And then now they've started making these components. And then you've come back and said, hey, we're going to need that. These are not, you know, they're not passing inspection. And is that what you're, give me a picture of what you're talking
about. Sometimes I would say, given the first of a kind Columbia that's under construction today, we've got a lot of suppliers that took on some complex components. First article testing doesn't go as expected. So we see a lot of that, especially on a new design. So I guess there's a lot of flavors of these, so I'll give you a few. But that's been pretty prevalent on Columbia. There have been some suppliers that have taken on a large volume from both platforms and then realized that they can't get the capacity to deal with it all. There's some suppliers that have taken on right-size contracts, but struggled to get some of the material through the chain to support their builds. So they're dealing with their own supply chain issues. And there's some instances where we find someone that's been doing work for us for a long time that discovers, you know, a chink in their quality management system that we then have to go investigate and help them understand and resolve, which can be somewhat labor intensive if you find the wrong thing at the wrong time. But that's part of everyday life when you're managing supply chain, and it's something that we work very hard to prevent and to make sure we detect at the right time.
So did COVID fundamentally, you know, because I remember I used to, you know, I went to school at Alabama, I mentioned that, and there was a really famous Mercedes plant that was down the road, and then down in Montgomery, Alabama, there was a really famous, it was the most technically advanced Hyundai plant in the world. And, you know, and when you would go tour, they were just these really cool, excellent tours where I never thought going through a car plant was going to be really exciting, but it was. And they always would talk about, you know, just-in-time supply and, you know, you didn't have large storehouses for components and all that. And, you know, we have COVID, and COVID seemed to have broken that sort of system. And are you doing things fundamentally differently now because of COVID and because that just-in-time approach sort of didn't work because of COVID? How has that sort of changed how you're building and doing things?
Yeah, so just-in-time has been, you know, our philosophy for a very long time in shipbuilding, both from, you know, source of supply to deliver to the shipbuilders. Even, you know, manufacturing of the shipbuilders to the next stage of construction, that philosophy works when you're in a very stable environment and when you have a low rate of production, it can work. But once you get, you know, much higher rate of production, even, I think that just, it's got too many opportunities to throw the entire thing off course. And if you get hit with anything, any shortage, any strain on the system, it's just nearly impossible to recover. So we are thinking about that differently in our business, because you just have such a long build cycle. It takes a while before you can introduce, you know, a fundamentally different philosophy, but we're looking at things like that right now. You know, how far can you separate the supply chain from the start of construction? How far can you separate stages of construction to make sure that you can account for any bumps along the way? And we're in process of thinking about what that means, particularly for our warehouses. But it's all doable. It just takes some time and a different stage of funding for the most part.
And do you think you're going to be able to get, faster and more efficient as you, go from the first Columbia to the second to the third? Does that, we sort of think of things as they should always get better and cheaper over time.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Sort of an American mentality, but that's not necessarily how things seem to happen. So are you anticipating sort of that? I mean, we saw, the first F-35s were really, really expensive. And now the price has come down quite a bit. Are you expecting, let's suppose the Navy says, hey, we're going to need 14 or 16 or 18 or 20 or 22 Columbia. Is that going to be something where you can say, okay, we can do that? Or are you guys going to be, this is sort of what we would want, but, this is a nightmare?
No, I am certain that once we get going, we'll be able to produce at that one per year rate, and we'll be able to keep going as long as the Navy wants to go. The trouble will be in climbing up that curve, like I said, of to high rate production. But I'm pretty confident that once we get there, we could sustain it. And there's no question that when it comes to a learning curve on the boat, we're already seeing it in some respects between the first build and the start of the second, which is happening right now. When you work out, especially from first boat to second, when you work out the kinks of the design build sequence, when you work out any kinks in the processes or the design itself, you can go way faster on the next time around once you incorporate all those lessons learned. And I do think that we should see boat over boat a learning curve, particularly as a workforce that we've grown today gets more seasoned in their careers. Our demographic has, all but flip-flopped on us from having a largely, seasoned workforce to a largely unseasoned workforce. And that same dynamic is happening all over the industry as those shipbuilders go from, apprentice or early stage of career to, 5 years down the road, we're going to have some pretty great talent with which to build these great submarines.
Now, it's that time in the show where I like to pull out Bob the Genie, and as I rub my magic lamp, of course, Bob grants all guests of NucleCast 3 wishes, but can't wish for health, wealth, or, to be young again. That'd be my wish. Could you imagine if we could take everything we knew now and be 20 or 30 years younger? That would be awesome.
Yeah, but we
can't do that. Bob does not. He said no. But you can make wishes about the submarine industrial base, the supply chain, the logistics. You can do that. So, Beth, let me ask you, what is your first wish?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wish I spent a little more time thinking about this because this was an golden opportunity I should have come in with. But I would say my first wish is that this nation would value manufacturing jobs just as much as the, technical career paths, because I think they don't. I think we as a culture don't. I think that culture's shifting a little bit. I think that's a good thing. But that would be my first wish, that we could instantly get the value of those careers and the way families feel about them and push their kids to go in that direction. So I'll give that one as my first one. Second, I wish I could take all the delinquency that we have in the supply base today and erase it so that they could all just focus on growing their capacity in a state that's not really in duress. Right now, we've got a lot of people in duress trying to get themselves out of a hole.
Is it that they need new equipment, like these, multi-million dollar machines that, do this sort of, I'm a knife guy. And so I watch videos on knife making and I'm sort of looking at, man, I wonder how much that machine costs and could I get one of those? And, So yeah. I can only imagine for the stuff you do, the cost of those machines is probably quite a bit more.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
Is that what their problem is?
Well, you know, it's all kinds of things, but that's my third wish. You're jumping right on. I wish I could give everybody in the submarine industrial base brand new machines with the highest level of technology that's available to man. and do it immediately. You know, there's lots of great investments going into the supply chain. There's a lot of suppliers with the help of some congressional authorizations, which have been a huge benefit. We're very, very thankful for, have been able to upgrade some of their equipment. It never feels like it's enough. And I'd love to be in a place where everybody had, you know, a replacement for every aging machine that was out there, equipped with the latest technology, and really could fast pace their manufacturing as much as humanly possible.
Okay, so we had three, you know, sort of great wishes. You know, I wish I could upgrade my equipment as well. You know, I did buy here recently a new bench grinder. So that was a, you know, I was excited about that, but you know, there's some other stuff, some other tools I'd really like. But now this sort of leads to my final question for you. And as we sort of wrap up the show, and you sort of leave that elevator pitch for all of the listeners, what is that sort of walking away message that you want the NucleCast audience to understand about submarine construction, supply chain, logistics? What do they, you know, what do you want them to remember 6 months or a year from now?
That's a tough one. I think I'd want them to appreciate the challenge that we're facing right now as an industry. I firmly believe this is the challenge of a lifetime, certainly my lifetime, to get both the industrial base and the shipbuilders in the shape it's going to take to support the demand our nation needs for submarines. I'd want people to know that we need great talent to contribute to the mission. So if you got the stomach for what it takes, please go see how you can contribute to building submarines, building the submarines of the future.
All right. Well, Beth Rafferty, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you on the next episode. Well, that was an interesting discussion. You know, I don't know if you always get excited about the prospects for a discussion on supply chains and logistics, but you know, I was having a conversation with Curtis McGiffin the other day, and we were, you know, telling him, hey, it's going to be harder than you think to upload and to do these, you know, to do these things that you're looking for. And I was thinking about welders, and I've been thinking about supply chains. And so to talk to Beth was actually really kind of an interesting conversation. Because we always want to think about, you know, give me 300 bombers or give me, you know, more of this or more of that before we think about, well, do we have the industrial capacity to, you know, or the pilots or the, you know, the cops or whatever to do these things. So having these kinds of conversations is actually really important. So I enjoyed it.
This has been a production of the ANWA Deterrence Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.